Thought Leadership from PwC.
I think it's a hard period of time for any organization. We've got to think about how we adjust to what the talent, interests, and needs are.
That's my guest, Rod Adams, PwC's U.S. and Mexico Talent Acquisition Leader. This is Heather Horn, and thanks for joining me for the next episode of our Forecast 2021 podcast miniseries. This is the last episode in the Forecast 2021 series, but don't worry, we have something special lined up for you next, so stay tuned until the end of this episode for more details. But back to today. The power has shifted and talent's in the driver's seat, leaving organizations wondering what their value proposition is for attracting top workers. That's why today we're looking at the best practices for recruiting and retaining talent. From development and learning to inclusion and flexibility, we'll run the gamut today. So let's get started. So Rod, thanks so much for joining me today. And this is a topic I think is top of mind for many, many people right now, because I think every time you open the newspaper, there's a new article about the talent crunch, whether you're a high schooler looking for a job or, obviously people much more experienced like us. So maybe just to kick things off, though, I think it'd be helpful for our listeners to understand sort of what you're responsible for in your role and your background in the firm.
I am responsible for our talent acquisition, our recruiting efforts across all of our businesses in the U.S. and Mexico firm. So all of the hiring we do from the very entry level, so our interns, which we have a really robust internship program, through our direct admit partners across all of our businesses. So really the working with the businesses to figure out what the demand is, what do we need, thinking about how we attract the talent. So our talent brand and what sources do we go to, all the way through our selection process, and then onboarding as well. And when I think onboarding, we really look at that time from the moment someone accepts an offer through about their first 6 months at the firm.
So I have many questions for you, but maybe before we get into sort of the heart of why we're talking today, I'm just curious, if you were to compare recruiting an intern to recruiting a direct admit partner, is there more commonality or more difference between dealing with those different groups of people?
So from a intern to direct admit partner, I'd say there's probably more difference.
That makes sense to me. Yeah,
there's probably more difference. And when I look at it across all the processes, right? And with interns, we know where to go to find them. 90%+ of them are coming directly from campus. So they are a population of talent interested and waiting to hear from us. Mm-hmm. And direct admit partners, it's quite the opposite, right? You've got to figure out where they are. It's very focused on niche skill sets versus we're more broad on the entry level side. So there's a lot of differences in, strategies and approach and how it works, recruiting from one end of the spectrum to the other.
Well, and I think that's actually very relevant for our listeners, because they are probably, if you think of someone who's a controller, CFO of a finance function, they are probably recruiting at all different levels as well. And so they're going to have to adjust their strategies. And I think some of these broader issues will impact them too. So maybe just to, again, kind of jump into this, if we think about recruiting today, I know things are shifting and, in general, business is going back to more in person, but how has this worked for you from a sort of remote perspective? And do you really feel like you can get to know these candidates in this electronic environment?
Yes. Yeah, so it has been an interesting transition over the last, 15 months. At a drop of a dime, really kind of going to a remote approach, a fully remote approach. I would say definitely at PwC and as an industry, we were starting to trend in that direction. So we were, as an example, for our entry-level recruiting, our interns and our associates, we were already doing all virtual interviews. So all of our interviews we were doing using a virtual tool versus in-person interviewing. We had made that move because, quite honestly, it was quicker, more flexible for the candidates. Versus trying to schedule, in office, in person interviews for everyone. And so you were starting to see trends to more remote type recruiting prior to the pandemic. And then the pandemic turned everything upside down. It is a different challenge. And there's a lot of different tools and a lot of different ways to engage with talent virtually. So it's out there and exists. The focus is still on making the experience personal. It's just not in person, right? So you can have personal and not in person. But there's been so much that's being done virtually, right? Their entire lives have been virtual the last 15 months. We have dealt with the burnout. That's probably been our biggest challenge. On if I go back a year, when we first started to do everything virtually, there was a lot of engagement, and that started to dwindle as time went on. And it was largely due to burnout, just everything in their life being virtual. They disconnected a little bit.
As I think about an interview process, and it made me think of this, every newspaper article I read these days or online article says that this sort of power has shifted and it's with the worker right now. And again, I said it ranges from, high school all the way up. And again, I know you're dealing with a lot of different levels, but is that your sense as well, is that you are really trying to attract people, or do you get the sense that they're trying to sell you on them?
We are definitely in a "we are trying to attract people" phase of this cycle. And it's a roller coaster, right? One group is always like kind of in the driver's seat. Right now, talent's in the driver's seat because it's just a hot market. There's a lot of demand and talent. People talk about the great resignation. Talent has a lot of choices. So they are in the driver's seat. So there is a focus on selling. What does your organization bring to the table? And the sell points vary, right? Like it could be anything. I think we tend to see at the top of the list learning. What possibilities am I going to have for learning? First of all, compensation. Compensation's always on the list.
It goes without saying. Yeah.
But beyond that, like I said, development, what opportunities am I going to have for development? That is traditional learning and development classroom, but more like on the job. How am I going to develop? Purpose and inclusion, big focus on what are organizations doing to create inclusive environments? What organizations are doing to have a bigger impact on the community other than just making a dollar, right? So that's definitely a big one. So that whole social purpose, inclusion space. And then I'd put it under I'll call it flexibility, but it's this, obviously we've all been working virtually. I think there's a mix on desire. Do people want to go back to being in person? Do they want to stay virtual? My experience is it's somewhere in the middle for most people. And so an organization's ability to have flexibility so that, workers can have a little bit of both. They can, have some time in person, have some time face-to-face with people, but also have the ability for flexibility. And it's a perfect world for the worker. It is a hard situation to manage, I think, for us in organizations. How do you create an environment where there is that much flexibility and still have fairness across? Is going to be a challenge, but that's what they're looking for. And that's, what they're getting in a lot of different places. So without that, I do think it is a challenge, and that needs to be a part of, I think, someone's value prop, an organization's value prop, as they think about how are they selling, their opportunities to talent.
Yeah. So, because we've talked about this on some recent podcasts, and I think the theme has been, first of all, don't assume anything because different workers want different things, but also then trying to understand what the workers want and then give it to them if it's possible. But what if I'm a controller listening and my company has announced either extreme? So either, yes, we're going back to the office. Everyone's going to be back in the office, 4 or 5 days a week, or nope, we're moving to a fully remote model. And now I'm trying to recruit workers, and maybe the models that I have aren't the ones that people want, because to your point, a lot of people want flexibility.
Yeah. I mean, I personal opinion, I think there's two things I'd say. One, to whatever extent as a controller, you can have some influence in trying to help your organization come to a model that's a little bit more flexible, I would encourage you to do that. And I know that's, easier said than done. So might not be possible in all situations. Where it's not, and you're one extreme or the other, I think what I would advise personally, because you said it, it is very personal. It's not the same from person to person. And so I think being true to whatever it is that you are, if you're in person or you're virtual, own it and and go after attracting talent that wants that way of working, because it's out there. I think there's plenty of people out there that want one or the other. But I think trying to be something that you're not is only going to have longer term negative impacts, because that's this dynamic has been around for a little while, but it feels heightened right now that they talk, whether it's on the various social channels that are out there, your brand spreads really fast. And if your brand is, you know, not being authentic about what you offer talent, that goes and negatively impact anyone's ability to attract talent.
Yeah. I mean, I guess it really makes sense that if you try to sell something that's not exactly the way it is, they're going to find out fast enough, and then it might not be a good fit for your organization.
Not a good fit. And then the word, because it's a hot market, they'll find something else. And then they'll also talk negatively in social media about their experience. So it's a double-edged sword there. So I would be true to whatever it is, you know, the organization has decided, whatever route they decided they wanted to take.
And then I think it was in my recent podcast with Bhushan Sethi, he had said, you know, also, we don't really know 6 months from now what this is going to look like. And how are people reacting to that? That's kind of, well, we think this is what it's going to be, but we're not 100% sure from an environment perspective.
And I think we're getting to the point, and the hard part is, and I've spent a lot of time with Michelle, the hard part is I think the individual's perspective on what they want will continue to evolve over the next 6 months and then a year and, you know, 18 months. I think it will just continue to, you know, their desires will continue to evolve, and organizations that are truly focused on how do they try to create cultures and environments where they can attract and retain talent are going to have to be flexible with their stance on this topic. And so I think we're at a point where we're getting the question all the time. You know, all interviews that we have are getting the question all the time, you know, what's your stance on, you know, working virtually? You got to have a position soon. I think we're getting late in the game to say we're still figuring it out. I think there's an expectation that organizations have a point of view, but then be flexible to evolve and pivot on that point of view as we continue to see what happens around us and to gauge interests of the people that we're hiring.
So one other question then, you know, we talk about flexibility of location for, you know, your workers, if they have to come in or if they don't, but how does this actually impact recruiting? Because now all of a sudden, if you are flexible for location, instead of being married to specific geography, you could recruit in theory from anywhere. So how are companies thinking about that?
Yeah. And that's one of the silver linings is that, and something quite honestly, most talent acquisition professionals, it's always been a challenge. Like being geography bound by nature limits the talent pool in which you can recruit for any job. And so opening it up has been fantastic when it comes to finding the best actual talent for the role with the right skill sets and the right experiences. And there are plenty of tools out there to help talent acquisition organizations find talent regardless of where it is. There's tools out there to help talent acquisition organizations assess what geographies they should be looking in for specific talent sets. And so now doesn't have to be in Chicago. I can broaden as a recruiter that search and identify, well, actually there's a bigger pool of available interested talent in Tampa. So I'm going to recruit I'm going to focus my energies there and could do one of two things, one or both things, not just one, but one, help me find the right talent, the better talent, but also find the talent faster. So that has been a nice win from a recruiting perspective, just that broader talent pool that you now could have access to.
So I know you're looking at this through the PwC lens, so this might not be a fair question, but so PwC is a huge company, and have a lot of people attracted to the name, et cetera. But now I'm a smaller company, or maybe I'm less well-known, and now I'm trying to compete with all of these organizations all over the place. Like it almost feels like it's good and bad because you have a bigger pool, but there's more people competing in your pool.
Well, that's fair. That's a fair point. That is a fair point. I probably am looking at that through through the PwC lens, especially if you're in a small market and you're a small organization and you're used to having a real kind of grasp on the talent in that market because there weren't many other opportunities for them. That does make it harder. And so I think that puts more pressure on, you know, what type of things are you doing to build your brand in that marketplace so that you still are, you know, an employer of choice. You're not an employer of choice just because you're convenient and you're there, but because of the opportunities that you offer.
Well, and I guess it goes back to what we said earlier about being authentic, owning who you are as an organization, and then maybe people would want to come work for that organization because you're local or, you know, whatever the case may be. So,
I think it's a hard period of time for any organization, including one of our size. And obviously, you know, as a partner, you felt it here. We've got to think about how we adjust to what the talent interests and needs are. And you started out by saying it is a talent market right now. They are in the driver's seat. So it's hard for an organization to not consider what the trends are and what the interests are and still be successful in landing talent right now. It's just not the right marketplace not to think about, okay, what culture am I putting out there? What opportunities? What is the value proposition of the organization? I think is incredibly important for any organization to be thinking about right now.
I have a few follow-up questions on some of the other factors because I know we spent a lot of time talking about location. But before that, I just have a broad question. You might have to dwell slightly on a lack of success, so just bear with me. But if you're thinking of two recruits that you've identified, you want both of them, and you wind up with one who accepts and one who declines, are there sort of differentiating factors? And again, if I'm thinking, if I'm a controller, I don't have maybe a whole organization or the time to screen 15 people and everything else. So what differentiates a success and also call it failure? Lack of success.
Yep. So I still think, and this is where it just gets back to the basics of recruiting. You take comp out of the scenario, it's relationships. It really still comes back to relationships. Usually when situation like you just laid out, you've got, you know, people you want and you don't get them, it's because they built a stronger emotional connection to a human being or multiple human beings at another organization. It's rarely, you know, some of these other things in our experience, because, you know, we do have a nice, you know, suite of the experience that we give our people. It's pretty high touch and it's pretty nice. So it is, in my experience, it's usually that human connection that makes a difference when someone is deciding on one employer versus the other. And sometimes it's a counter offer. Sometimes it's they've got offers from multiple organizations, whatever it may be. It's that human connection that usually really makes a difference.
So Rod, I was laughing to myself because you and I were comparing notes before we started about both being in the LA office around 2000. And I bet if I had asked you that question, then you would have given me the same answer.
Same answer.
Put aside all this technology and everything else, it would have been the exact same thing, that human connection.
It's the thing that has never changed. Now, how you build the human connection, are you going to campus and doing a bunch of activities and programs and events, or are you connecting like this over video? The means in which the connections are happening are different. But it is the human connection that ultimately makes the difference. All of the other stuff around, again, this is, you know, high level trend, not 100% of the cases, but in most cases, all of the other stuff around brand, what they may read on one social media channel or what they may hear from a friend, that impacts their desire to even want to get in the process, right? So there's all these things that happen brand wise that impacts whether someone even applies, they accept your call. But once they've done that, it's more the human connection.
Definitely makes sense. So let me go back then to a few of the other things you said were important. And in particular, you mentioned diversity as an important thing. And I know that you recently wrote an article for Fortune on this topic. So what was the thesis of your article, and how do you see this playing out as you deal with recruiting today?
Yeah. So the article I wrote, and our focus, my focus on diversity from a talent acquisition perspective, and it crosses over into retention and, you know, development once you've hired someone, was really around a couple of things. One, as organizations, if they've got a desire to build a diverse workforce, have to be thoughtful about where they go to find diversity, right? It's not, I'm just going to keep going to the same places and the same well that I've been going and, you know, be surprised when I'm not finding diversity. You've got to go to a lot of different places. So we've definitely made deliberate steps to have a broader approach to the sources in which we recruit from, really focusing on where can we find more diversity? Where are, you know, historical Black colleges, as an example, Hispanic serving institutions, but those aren't the only two examples, because those, you know, those have gotten popular over the last couple of years and still great sources of talent, but there's a lot of other places. So thinking uniquely about the sources. But then I talked a lot about in that article around mentorship and sponsorship and how individuals and organizations need to think about how they provide that as part of the acquisition and attraction process, especially from an entry-level perspective, where it is typically a longer courtship, for lack of a better word. You know, you spend a lot of time getting to know each other versus on the experience, it's usually a quicker transaction. And how do you, you know, provide that value to those individuals through some level of mentorship and sponsorship, I think it's been a difference maker for us, for sure. And then once you get them, how do you maintain that? Or if you haven't already started it, how do you build that into the people processes once they're here? And it is, I think, two different things. You know, the mentorship is, I think, really being there to provide that guidance to individuals in a transparent, trust-based way, right? Providing them that the push they need, the information they need to help them succeed. And I think sponsorship goes a step further. Mentorship is probably part of sponsorship, but it goes a step further, you know, pounding the table for those individuals when they're not in the room, right? Like, how are you sponsoring their opportunities that they may or may not get if they didn't have your sponsorship? And so really thinking about how that's set up for the diverse talent you're trying to attract and bring into the organization, I think is important.
So, Rod, we've talked about diversity on some past podcasts, and it definitely can get uncomfortable very quickly. But let me ask a question. So what if you're dealing with, you know, someone or the organization, and again, this would not be PwC, but it's a hypothetical, yeah, where, you know, let's say the leader is saying, well, I treat everyone the same, so I don't need to sponsor or mentor because it's a completely equal playing field. How do you think about that in the context of this conversation?
Yeah, I just, you know, my personal opinion is that's not realistic. That's not a point of view that is recognizing the fact that it's not an equal playing field, right? There is a lot of history behind the fact that it we're still working towards an equal playing field. And when I say diversity, that's all dimensions of diversity, right? So I think any individual that gets hired, again, easier said than done, depending on how many people you're hiring, but any individual that gets hired, the right way to do it, to set people up to be successful as possible, is look at them as individuals and recognize some of them may need things that others don't need, right? And thinking about, okay, where do we hire them from? What experiences did they have? What skills are they bringing to the table? All those factors should influence, okay, what level of support, sponsorship, development, whatever it may be that they need once they get here. And again, that could look very different, you know, whether it's a Black Latinx hire or a female hire or a veteran hire or whatever it may be. Each individual is different. They come to the organization with the, you know, different experiences and backgrounds, and realizing if you treat them all exactly the same and give them exactly the same experience when they start and not recognizing their individuals, yeah, some of them are going to do fine, but you're definitely not playing an active role in doing whatever you can to ensure success, or at least not ensure success, but ensure an environment where someone can be successful for everyone.
Well, and I guess your point there is it's not just obvious, say, diversity, but actually taking that approach is going to make everyone more successful.
It's going to make everyone more successful. It's going to make everyone more successful. And I think the reality is, you know, especially with, you know, underrepresented minorities, is that you will doing that, it clearly becomes pretty obvious where there are experiences and things for a lot of underrepresented minorities that they just haven't been prepared in the same way. They're equally skilled to do the job. They haven't been prepared in the same way. And that could get them off on the wrong foot. And if that happens, it's so hard to recover. That's been a big major focus of ours is, you know, really starting off on the right foot because it sets that foundation and that groundwork for success long term.
Wow. Well, we'll definitely include a link to the article in our show notes. But let me ask you a question then in the context of the broader hiring question, because if I got you right when we started and you were listing the things that are important, putting compensation aside, this question of inclusion is important sort of across the board. It's not limited to a certain group. So is that because you're just seeing a different attitude in the workforce, or how do you think about that?
So 100% right. What we've seen, it's important across the board. I do think it's, you know, what we're seeing in general externally, right? It's a different level of appreciation of the environment people want to be in, right? The environment people want to be a part of, whether it's, you know, personally and socially or, you know, in a work setting. They want to be in an environment that is inclusive, that is set up to give everyone the chance to succeed. So absolutely, for us, it is a part of our sell messages, talking about our culture and the different things that we do to drive a culture of a word that we use a lot of is belonging, where everyone feels like they belong. They have a voice. They can bring their point of view. They are definitely valued for the individuals that they are. That matters to everyone. It's always, for me, feels good when we get that feedback from those individuals that, you know, if you just looked at them, you'd say, okay, diversity probably doesn't matter to them. That's not the case, right? They're looking to be in an environment that is inclusive and does create, you know, a sense of belonging for everyone.
Well, and I guess to your point, some elements of diversity are very obvious, some are not.
Right.
And so you don't really know anyone's looking for. But I think the reason
that's what you learned quickly.
Yes. And your message, I think, is great because, again, we might have someone listening where either they don't work for a huge company, maybe their company doesn't have the programs that they might want to have in place. But this idea of, oh, create belonging in your department, it's probably something anyone can do. You don't need a big corporate program to do that.
That's not a program, right? And, you know, we're guilty like many other organizations of sometimes trying to over-program things, but it's not a program. It is those, going back to relationships again, it's those individual relationships that get created, the conversations that you're brought into or the conversations that you're not brought into or the opportunities that you're given a chance to get involved in or the ones you're not given a chance to get involved in. That all happens at that team level that, you know, all of your listeners absolutely have the ability to create the right environment and to model the right behaviors.
So let me ask another question then, semi-related, is well-being and initiatives around well-being, because that's another big sort of buzzword. And if you know, you read in business magazines, you're going to see quite a lot. How do you think that fits in from a recruitment process? Or is that more once employees are there, retaining employees?
So we use it for recruiting. We absolutely leverage it as part of our sale messages. And, you know, you've alluded to it. It's a relatively large machine because of the volume of people that we recruit. But I would say I'd probably use this as an example. If we go back a few years, 3, 4, 5 years, you know, we go to career fairs, we'd host, you know, firm presentations where we talk about the services that we provide. We talk about X, Y, or Z. We're now doing events where it's actually well-being sessions where maybe it's a meditation session, or maybe it's a session where we've brought in a nutrition expert and we're giving them some information on nutrition. And like, so we've really kind of embedded into the experiences that we have where we get to engage with talent. And it's our way of showing that we're not just saying it's important. It actually is important because this is what we do with our own people. And oh, by the way, we're doing it with you so you can get a glimpse into the type of things that we offer to our people and the firm. And it is very well received. Those are probably our most well received activities. So we do spend a lot of time highlighting it. You know, that's a pretty big way in which we do it, but more subtly, or, you know, I shouldn't say subtly, but in a way that's probably a little bit more applicable. We use it like our stories. So if you go to our website, a lot of career sites will tend to have testimonials from their people about certain things in the culture. We put a lot of stories out there around well-being and how our people are able to take care of themselves so that they can bring a better version of themselves to work. So we highlight that in the stories we tell through social media and website and things like that as well.
All right. So then, Rod, I want to talk to after you hire someone, but before they start, before I get to that, just any final sort of best practices from a recruiting perspective that, again, as you think about this huge program that you're running, that's kind of important to you or sort of a bedrock of how you think about bringing all these people into PwC?
Yeah, I would say a couple of things, and I've said them already, but I'll just reiterate them. One, the trends around what talent is looking for and what is viewed as an ideal employer, they continue to evolve and they change relatively frequently. And so I do think having that insight when you're thinking about hiring talent is important, and making sure that you are thinking about the things that your organization offers in the context of those as a foundation. You know, is this something that's important? Is this something that we can talk about in an organization? So having that part as part of the strategy, that whole, what I'd call talent insights, what are the trends? What is talent in the market looking for? I think is important. And then not forgetting, it's all about relationships. Like we said earlier, same thing it was about when I started doing this 20 years ago to what it's about relationships. It's just a matter of how you orchestrate getting the right people in front of talent and getting those individuals to tell their story, to be open and to build those relationships with the individuals they're looking to recruit.
And then how about, so then now I've made an offer and I've got this crucial time between sort of the offer and when they start and then maybe right when they start. What are some of the keys to success for that process to make sure your new employees get off to the best start that they can?
Yeah, it is a little bit of a messy process. You know, you talked about earlier, direct to partner to intern. This is one of the places where there's a big gap, at least in our world, because our interns and new hires, we hire 7 months before they start with us. So there's this huge gap in time that we look to fill with different ways that they can stay engaged and start to feel part of our organization. I don't think that's the case for most, so I won't focus there. Usually it's probably more like 2 to 6 weeks, right? I'd say a couple things. One, it's an interesting time for them, right? Because they're leaving one employer, moving to another employer. That's just a big life move and just dealing with the emotions around that. But then typically with any employer they're going to, there is just a plethora of administrative things that they have to do, both before they start and then definitely in those first couple of days. Figuring out how you streamline that, that's the feedback we always get. It's just overwhelming. Like everything that has to get done is overwhelming. And there's so many different places to go to find information. And so that is one place I do think technology can be really helpful in streamlining that process for your new hires, because it just can be such a negative experience that it just sets everything off on the wrong foot, just purely because it's administratively complicated. Beyond that, you know, I think from the day they accept, you know, through that first 6 months, identifying who is going to be that person's guide. We've called it a lot of different things. We've called it a buddy, coach, mentor. I think we have onboarding ambassadors right now. So we have a lot of different things, but, and it's usually more than one person, but who is going to accept the next day, going to call them and then be that resource for them to go to with any little silly question that they may have. So it's not usually typically the person that hired them, because that's usually a reporting relationship, but someone more their a peer who is there to just help them navigate the nuances of the of an organization in a real human person to person type of way has been a very positive approach for us in making that entry feel good.
So final question for you, and as you were talking, so I was recruited by the firm 30 years ago, and like most things about work, completely different process. And so often I'll ask someone to look into their crystal ball. I won't ask you to look 30 years in the future, but maybe 3 years in the future. What do you think will be the same about the conversation and what will be different? And I'll take one thing off the table, because clearly relationships will be the same.
Will be the same. Yeah.
Yeah.
I was like, I got to go somewhere different than relationships now. So what will be the same? So I think the dynamic of the social machine that exists, the digital machine that exists, having a significant influence on an organization's brand will be the same or more intensified, right? Like this challenge we have of, you know, having so many different ways to go out and find out, you know, information around your brand, around how your employees feel about working at your organization, which I say a challenge, it should be a good thing. As long as you feel good about your brand, right? But it is a challenge, because you can't control what your people are going to say or what individuals who went through your interview process are going to say. And talent will continue to trust that more than they will trust anything they read on your website, right? So that is here to stay and probably will only intensify. And so what will change? So I definitely think that, you know, what motivates talent to move, consider organizations where they want to work will evolve. We're talking about diversity and purpose and development and well-being right now. It's hard to imagine that any of those things wouldn't be at the top of the list, but it will change. It inevitably does. So there will be different areas of focus for talent for us to think about. What will also change is, you know, 3 years from now, who knows how many times, but the driver, whether it's us as an organization or talent, will continue to evolve. And then, and we didn't get into it deeply here. I kind of mentioned it on the onboarding thing, but in the last few years, in the space of human resources, talent acquisition, there's been the most investment in technology. Like I read a report recently around, you know, just the venture capital money that has been pumped into human capital technology. It is predominantly in the talent acquisition space, whether it's tools you use to actually help assess talent. You know, there's AI right out there now where you can do video interviews, and the technology is actually assessing the quality of the person's answers and their facial expression. It exists, and individuals are using it. We're not using it, but organizations are using it. And so I do think it is a space ripe for continued technology to enhance the experience that we give talent, enhance the speed in which we can identify and hire talent, because that is definitely always a focus. How fast can we get people? And then our ability to, you know, select talent. So that will continue to change, and I can only imagine 3-4 years from now what might be available in that space.
All right. Well, Rod, really appreciate all your insight, and thanks so much for joining me today.
Thanks for having me.
That does it for today. To find a link to Rod's article on 3 ways to ramp up diversity recruiting and commit to sustainable change, head over to viewpoint.pwc.com, where you'll find the link in the show notes. Join me back here every Tuesday and Thursday for new podcast episodes. Starting next week, we're kicking off a 5-week Facts on Spacs series. Our aim is to cut through the noise to tell you exactly what you need to know about this boom. So join me each week as we break it down. So that you never miss an episode, follow the PwC Accounting Podcast series wherever you listen to your podcasts. And to stay up to date on all the latest content, let's connect on LinkedIn. For PwC Thought Leadership, I'm Heather Horn. Thanks for tuning in.
This podcast is brought to you by PwC, all rights reserved. PwC refers to the U.S. member firm or one of its subsidiaries or affiliates, and they sometimes refer to the PwC network. Each member firm is a separate legal entity. Please see www.pwc.com/structure for further details. This podcast is for general information purposes only and should not be used as a substitute for consultation with professional advisors.